welcome to the Iran Podcast. I'm your host, Negar Mortazavi, a journalist and senior fellow at the Center for International Policy in Washington, D.C. Today, we'll talk about Iran's shift to the east towards big powers in Asia, namely Russia and China, as well as Tehran's engagements with some of its regional rivals like Saudi Arabia. And we'll also talk about Iran joining the BRICS and what this all means in a shifting global order, and specifically in the Middle East. Joining me today are two experts who study this topic, Nicole Gryevsky and Matthew Droin. Nicole is a fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and an associate researcher at the Harvard Kennedy School. Her work focuses on Russia-Iran relations and Russian-Iranian views of the global nuclear order, and she's writing a book on Russia-Iran relationship. And Matthew is a visiting fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, here in Washington. Previously, he was deputy head of strategic affairs at the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and before that, he worked for the French Ministry of Economy at French embassies in Kuwait, Iraq, and the United Arab Emirates. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us. Yes.
It's great to have you both. So, Nicole, let's first talk about Iran's deepening ties with Russia. We know it's a complex and multifaceted relationship, not necessarily only transactional. And you too also just published a great piece on this very topic titled Iran, Russia, and the Challenges of Inter-Pariah Solidarity. Talk about this partnership between Tehran and Moscow and its various foundations that have built it.
Well, one thing about the Russia-Iran relationship that's occurred in recent years has been the strengthening and binding around a common vision or opposition to what they see as a discriminatory kind of U.S.-led international order. This has obviously corresponded to like a domestic shift in both countries with the emboldening of hardline elements. But the war in Ukraine, if anything, served as a catalyst to this. There were already ongoing trends and ongoing agreements and kind of efforts to coordinate this joint opposition that's been around for at least 5 years before the war in Ukraine. But the war in Ukraine really intensified that, and it also transformed the relationship, where you see Iranian drones being used on the battlefield, which was partly facilitated by this increase of military contacts through the Syrian civil war. And so that's one element of that. At the same time, because of this shared sense of Western pressure, Russia and Iran have also at least attempted to work together in ways such as de-dollarization, which has not come to fruition really, or also with alternative multilateral organizations. So the Shanghai Cooperation Organization with Iran's membership, which was a long process that actually occurred in September 2021 when the Russians invited Russia and the Chinese and Central Asian states invited Iran to join the organization. So there's a lot of things that kind of contribute to this. It's one part of it's domestic within Russia. Within Iran, there are these elements that have been prompting and kind of pushing for a closer relationship. But it's also the international factor and the shared antipathy towards the West, which has also served as a catalyst.
Mm-hmm. And we know the opposite camp or the West has tried to counter this partnership with sanctions, diplomatic isolation, various policies. Western officials, pundits describe Iran and Russia as pariah states. But in your piece, you explain that just by declaring them, Russia and Iran, as pariah doesn't necessarily make them so. And in fact, Tehran and Moscow have been able to continue building sort of a global partnership. Matthew, talk about these policies and the Western policies that we're talking about and why you think they haven't necessarily worked in turning these two into pariahs.
Yes, I think you aptly described the main argument of the piece, or maybe the main motivation for us to write it, which is to question what we think is a very Western-centric view that because the West sanctions or tries to decouple or to isolate Russia and Iran on the international stage, it doesn't necessarily mean that they became pariah. I mean, if you look at the unfolding events in Africa, when you see Russian flags being waved, or if you look at the BRICS expansion, which we will certainly discuss later on, you can definitely see that if you broaden the lens from only the Western perspectives, then these two countries are not as isolated as perhaps some capitals would like them to be. And so what we have seen is, over the past decade, a toughening of Western policies towards these two states, perhaps not so under the Obama administration, which tried to engage both through the JCPOA, for instance, on the nuclear Iran ambitions, or trying to negotiate with Putin on previous red lines in Syria over chemical attacks. But then it became, especially on Iran, the U.S. and the U.S. Changed its policies under Trump, going into maximal pressure on Iran, which really antagonized the relations between the West and Iran. And then after this, of course, came the war, the Russian war on Ukraine, and which led the West, the EU, the US, and others to take unprecedented sanctions against these two, against Russia. But what we see is that perhaps it creates difficulties, certainly for these two countries, which are trying hard to alleviate the burden of the sanctions, but it hasn't altered their political objectives and their strategic path. Perhaps it has, on the contrary, even emboldened them.
Mm-hmm. And Nicole, let's take a step back, if you can. I want to look at the history of Iran's relationship with Russia. It's been a fraught history. There have been tensions, many ups and downs in this partnership, but nevertheless, they have arrived where they are today, and they're deepening this relationship and the ties. But talk about the history and some of the surprising moments that don't necessarily seem as a natural partnership, but we see where they have arrived today.
If anything, the historical element of Russia-Iran relations has probably been one of the sorest spots, partly because within the Iranian consciousness or popular consciousness, there is this memory of Russian aggression, Russian territorial gains, back to the Tsarist era, where Iran lost and ceded a lot of territory to the Russians. And this actually is brought up sometimes in the Iranian media when they're trying to critique the Russians. But more recently, and kind of more to where we see today, is in at least, 2010, even, the Russia-Iran relationship was probably at its lowest point. Russia supported pretty harsh sanctions against Iran in the Security Council, and by extension, delayed or barred the delivery of the lucrative S-300 missile defense system. In response, Iran tried to take Russia to the International Court of Arbitration, and this really led to a downturn in Russia-Iran relations. Within a few years, Putin comes back to the presidency. There's the Arab Spring. There's protests within Russia. The Syrian civil war is unraveling. And this is when you start to see somewhat of kind of a warming between Russia and Iran. Then this leads, of course, to the Syrian civil war, which did lead to the most intense level of cooperation between Russia and Iran in recent history before the war in Ukraine. And you see this kind of, emergence of this coalition supporting Assad. Even in Syria, though, Russia and Iran had a lot of tensions. There was competition over certain interests. Russia had to manage its relations with not only Iran and Turkey, but also Iran and Israel, Iran and the United States. And so these were kind of emergent and simmering at the same time. This all kind of was happening all the while, where Russia and Iran found some kind of common synergy or common, area to bond over. And that was usually the opposition to the West. And even when we were attempting to depart from this kind of Western centrism and understanding Russia and Iran, for both Russia and Iran, their very like essence and national narratives have always been centered on kind of an opposition to the West as like this one external actor. And in a sense, part of the reason why I think Russia and Iran have been able to form somewhat of a cohesive, you know, narrative in their relations has been through this mutual opposition. One thing to note about the Syrian civil war is that it did lead to more tangible, concrete contacts between the Russians and the Iranians, both formal and informal. And it did, in some ways, facilitate what we see as this drone issue with Ukraine, where had it not been for the Syrian civil war, it's quite unlikely that Russia and Iran would have had these established military-to-military contacts and personal contacts that did facilitate the transferring of Iranian drones to Ukraine. So, and you know, even as recently as a few months ago, there were tensions in the Russia-Iran relationship, where Russia came out and supported the UAE's view of the islands in the Strait of Hormuz, and Iran was, of course, very critical of that. So there are things that are still festering. There's a lot of tension, and there's by no means this is a perfect relationship. However, a lot of factors have contributed to it being strengthening and also to Russia and Iran being able to compartmentalize some of these tensions and work on areas where they do have common interests.
Mm-hmm. Let's stay in the region in the Middle East. Matthew, I want to ask you about Iran's engagements within the Middle East with some of its Arab rivals. Tehran and Riyadh recently reached a surprising agreement that was brokered by China. They're slowly trying to repair, rebuild the relationship. This is also simultaneously happening as Israel is also trying to engage and build relations, normalize with the Arab world. How do you assess this shifting dynamic in the Middle East, and if you see any connections to what we were just talking about as far as Iran shifting to the east and towards Russia?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's interesting to see the parallel tracks, the shift to the east, and at the same time, let's say, a thaw in the regional relations of Iran in its vicinity in the Middle East, and the connection, as you mentioned, is also that China, it's disputable what was exactly its role, but at least played a role in the rapprochement between Saudi and Iran, which were the two historical enemies with a lot of impact on the regional stability, because they have been fighting proxy wars in a lot of countries in the region, be it Lebanon, be it Yemen, be it Iraq. So these dynamics, which I think you mentioned Israel, you mentioned the ties being built between Israel and some Gulf countries through the Abraham Accords, and perhaps one common denominator to all these evolutions is also the fact that the U.S. is pivoting from the region. And so it leaves some room for the regional players to find new ways of dialogue between them, and perhaps less ideologize and more pragmatic ways to engage each other. And so when it comes to Iran, it's always a bit opaque in its foreign policy. So it's not exactly clear what are the drivers behind it, but of course probably the effects of the sanctions and the need to find new partners certainly plays a role, but indeed the nothing is solved in the regional crisis, be it that I mentioned, be it Lebanon or Iraq or Yemen. But I think the situation is not worsening, and definitely we see that the rapprochement is going step by step, but it's improving. The Saudi and Iran have reestablished diplomatic ties for the first time since 2016. It followed the reestablishment of diplomatic ties between UAE and Iran. So Yes, these are definitely interesting dynamics, and they are definitely connected to the shift to the East.
Mm-hmm. And Nicole, I want to take a step back from the region and talk about this global network of solidarity that Tehran and Russia specifically have been able to build over the years. And just recently, we saw Iran and a few others, including Saudi Arabia, have joined BRICS, the group of world's fastest growing economies. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and now a few more that came again as a surprise to some. Talk about the significance of and the extent of this global network of solidarity and what you think about joining the BRICS.
Yeah, so with this global network of solidarity, I think it goes actually beyond the East. Even though, you know, the Look East policy was prominent under Ahmadinejad, and then now it's kind of getting revived again. Raisi recently made a trip to Latin America. Iran's been trying to do outreach to Africa. Iran's foreign policy is going beyond the Middle East. And I think that's a really interesting and significant development. When it comes to the BRICS, and I think the BRICS should be viewed within the broader processes of kind of alternate or like non-Western organizations. So the SCO would be part of that, and the Eurasian Economic Union. ASEAN would also be a part of it. But these organizations are typically created as some kind of form of or articulation of what these countries desire to see the world looking like. And the BRICS is definitely one of those. However, one of the issues with the BRICS, and I think that it's kind of deviates from the Iranian state media on this, is that the BRICS really isn't an organization, it's a bloc. The BRICS hasn't really substantially achieved anything in its existence. It doesn't, until I guess at the summit, there were no discussions on how to expand the organization. And so whether or not this was driven by, you know, consensus, or perhaps one of the countries within the BRICS was more enthusiastic for that, that's to be debated. But the BRICS doesn't have the institutional architecture to help Iran withstand some of its financial and economic difficulties. It's symbolic and that's significant. It is a bit interesting because for Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, for example, Iran initially applied in 2008 and it took till 2021 for Iran to be invited to join this process. With the BRICS, Iran's been far less involved. Historically, Iran sometimes attended joint SCO and BRICS summit, so the 2015 summit in Ufa, 2015 or 2016 summit in Ufa, Rouhani attended that, and was part of this kind of, you know, broader network again of these multilateral organizations. But in general, Iran hasn't been as active in the BRICS, and that's what's interesting is Iran hasn't put as much effort into it, and then now we're seeing Iran being invited to join with this coalition of states. So it says something about the organization as it's evolving and it sees itself having a bigger global role. There's no real mechanisms for it to achieve that at the moment. And so I think what is something to look at is what ways does the BRICS evolve and how does it create these, you know, bureaucratic elements and also, you know, rules and mandates and ways to really become more of a cohesive bloc. But also what Iran's involvement looks like. I think that's really interesting. And whether or not Iran really does place more emphasis on the BRICS or if it's just going to be, you know, this kind of summitry that Iran attends every year.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, what do you think about this expanding global network? I know you've also specifically looked at Africa.
Yes, what is interesting is that these solidarities are not limited to, let's say, Russia and Iran, a wider neighborhood. It is really global, and the two countries have been very good in harnessing the resentments and frustrations all over the world towards what is perceived as a Western-led international order. So you could see it even as far as in South America, where Ibrahim Raisi was in June, going to Venezuela, to Nicaragua, to Cuba. But this is also very obvious in Africa. So we talk a lot about Russia's creeping influence in Africa, and be it not staging, but be it present and behind the scenes in the different coup that we are witnessing. They have been advancing their interests through the Wagner Group in Central Africa, in Mali, now in Burkina Faso, in Niger. But arguably, Iran is doing a bit of the same, maybe less exposed, but they have also been progressing, signing cooperation agreements with Nigeria, with Algeria, and being present in countries that are where the state is crumbling, like Somalia or Eritrea, gaining footholds and economic concessions in return for security guarantees. They also use not private military companies, but offshoots of the Quds force in the continent. So there are a lot of similarities in the ways Russia and Iran act in these regions.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Matthew, I also wanted to ask you about policy recommendations. In your piece, you made some recommendations, alternative recommendations to what the West has been pursuing towards Iran and Russia, the pariahs, and what you think instead would be effective or they should pursue specifically for the Western bloc.
Right, so this might be an unpopular opinion, but one of the argument, one of the suggestion of the piece is for the West to embark in some sort of a strategic patience, because what we see is that when we confront these countries too directly, it usually emboldens them, but when we engage and try to dialogue with them, they usually take the cake and eat it. So what we suggest is that the West should concentrate on building and consolidating its position and strength, notably in the terms of deterrence, of course, against nuclear weapons, but all kind of hostile actions that the two countries could take, be it cyber security or in the space or maritime domain. And the other set of policies is, as we cannot really engage these regimes and these governments, so the piece calls for refocusing the energy on the other actors on which maybe the West can have some leverage and can maybe try to change the course of events. We're specifically mentioning the civil societies and the diasporas of these two countries. Also to show them that the West is not against Iranians or Russians per se. They are against the regimes that oppress them. So really, in the public communication, make a clearer distinction. Also for the time where perhaps these regimes were crumbling or changed, and we see how fragile they are. If you look, for instance, at the Prigozhin mutiny earlier this summer, so that the population understand that the West, despite what they have been hearing for decades, the West is not against them. The West is against the regimes. And also the other part is to engage what we call, and other call, the swing states, which are these middle powers that don't want to pick sides between the West and other countries such as China or Russia or Iran. And usually, I mean, what we see is that the West usually engages these countries in summoning them to pick sides. And we argue, and others argue the same, that these countries should be treated and considered as peers, not as variables in the strategic competition, and perhaps the West should have a more listening ear to their concerns and why they don't want to clamp down on Russia and Iran, and so build different partnerships with these countries. So yeah, this is in a nutshell what the main recommendations that we had.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, Nicole and Matthew, I want to thank you so much for joining the Iran podcast.
Thank you so much, Nigar, for having us.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate being here.
That was Nicole Grayevsky at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and Matthew Droin at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington. And thank you for listening to the Iran podcast. You can find us on all major podcast apps, so please do subscribe. And if you can, leave a review and rating for us. That helps us be seen and heard by more listeners. And you can also support our work and follow us on Twitter at Iran Podcast. I'm your host, Nigar Mortazavi, and until next week, goodbye.